welcome one and all to the first ever Empire Writes Back podcast. We are so excited to bring you aboard with us. I'm site expert John Franklin, alongside my co-site expert Sean Dyer. Sean, let's talk some New York sports today.
Let's do it.
All right, well, you know, just recently we had the NHL draft come at us, and a lot of top shelf news from everyone, Rangers, Devils, a little bit from the Islanders, but not as exciting as most fans would have hoped with the Islanders' recent play. But why don't you start us off? The Rangers had a pretty good night for themselves on draft night, huh?
They did, yes. So they decided to participate in the first round of the draft for the first time since 2012. They had traded their first round picks 2013 through 2016 to try to make some win now moves, which they did. They've gone to the playoffs 11 out of the last 12 seasons. However, haven't been able to get the cup, so they decided to make some picks this year. They had two. They got the number 7 pick in the draft, Elias Anderson. Should be a stud. He's a center. Hopefully will take the place of Derek Stepan, because that's who they lost to get the pick. They traded Derek Stepan, who's been playing for, I think, almost 7 seasons for the Rangers. He's been a fan favorite. He's a great guy, great player. They also traded backup goalie Antti Raanta. So they lost some pieces, but they added a few. Also got Philip Chytil, 21st overall. So two young guys that hopefully will they need some fresh faces, some young blood. So hopefully that'll help them get over the top.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if we look at these guys, we're fans first. We're not necessarily like the most credentialed reporters out there, but looking at it from a fan perspective, I'm not a Rangers guy. You're a Rangers guy.
Yeah.
Do you think this is a move that had to be made right away? Do you think it was something that necessarily is going to do the job to make it a win now mentality in New York?
I think it's definitely hard to sell fans on losing a guy like Stepan, because he's been such a big part of the team recently. But at the same time, you got to look at it, and they haven't been able to get what you want to get. You haven't got the cup yet, and as great as it is to keep going to the playoffs every year, that's not really what you're looking for, especially in a market like New York. It's tough just because You're not really satisfied with a couple wins in the playoffs. You want championships. It's a city accustomed to winning championships. So I think for me, I've never paid too much attention to the NHL drafts, because the Rangers have never been involved in that first round. So it was nice to actually read some reports on players and actually pay attention to it a little bit this year. And I do like the Anderson pick. I don't know as much about Chytil, but this kid Anderson, he was 7th overall pick, so hopefully they said he is the, out of all the players in this draft, could be the quickest to the NHL. They may see him actually playing for the Rangers this year. So I think it's a little mixture of playing towards the future and still trying to win now by getting a guy that's pretty close to NHL ready.
I mean, when you get a guy that's so NHL ready, from the way you're describing him, it seems almost as if, look, we know the Rangers are good. The right. Rangers know the Rangers are good. The league knows the Rangers are a good team. I mean, you're looking at an Eastern Conference that has had arguably some of the best talent that we've seen in our entire life of watching hockey, with, you know, Sidney Crosby, you got the Alex Ovechkins, guys like that are super talented. And to be fair, have the Rangers ever really had that superstar on the ice for them that's going to get the job done? Do you think this kid could maybe end up being that centerpiece? Right, so that's the future.
Yeah, so I was thinking is there really hasn't been the big name guy. I mean, they signed Rick Nash, who's supposed to be a big name guy, but he's a little bit on the older end, and he hasn't been quite. There's nobody quite like Crosby and Ovechkin, but even you're looking like a Patrick Kane or somebody like, or even PK Subban. Those are the top tier names. Where Rangers have been led by like the Matt Zuccarellos and the Chris Kreiders and Stepan and Derek Brassard before they traded him last year. Those aren't the big name guys.
No.
And when you don't have a first round pick since 2012, it's tough to find that big name guy unless you go pay somebody big money. And the Rangers haven't had a lot of money to spend, and that's one of the reasons why they traded guys like Stepan and Raanta to clear some space. But the best way to get a stud like that is through the draft, because it's hard.
Develop.
Yeah, because a guy like Ovechkin and Crosby, they're never going to hit the market. Those guys you get drafted by your team, and then that's lifetime. That's who you're going to be with.
Especially when you win. Like, a guy like Crosby's never going anywhere.
Yeah, no. He's back-to-back championships already, and he's not going anywhere. Meanwhile, Ovechkin's had some troubles winning in D.C., so maybe he gets moved. But I think definitely having a top-10 pick helps, because especially most times when you go to the playoffs, you're not going to have a top-10 pick. So I think hopefully this Anderson kid can get to the Garden quick and start scoring some goals.
And just kind of straying from that, the topic of the draft, and still talking about the Rangers a little bit, you know, they still got the king between the pipes. And he's their, you know, he's obviously been the money piece. And everybody always says with hockey, you need a hot goalie to win you a championship.
Yep.
And, you know, Henrik has obviously been great. And his whole career, he's been absolutely masterful. But at a certain point, does age become a question mark? Like in any other sport. But when you're in the draft, you take a center with a team that you're trying to win with. Are you a little worried having somebody with that kind of age holding it down in the crease, or as a fan in that perspective?
Well, Father Time is undefeated, but watching the Rangers this year, I think Lundqvist does still have some things left in the tank. But yeah, definitely the championship window is open only as long as Henrik is Henrik as we've known him. Once his play, and he did have a few issues this year, and he also had some health issues, which is why a guy like Ronta was so important. So it's definitely important to replace him after trading him. But yeah, it's you have your window while your superstar is in his prime, and once that starts to go, your window starts to close quicker and quicker. So
yeah,
they definitely have to make some moves now. And if Lundqvist's play starts to suffer, then could be some real trouble.
I mean, look, I'm a Devils guy. I got to watch it firsthand. Martin Brodeur, who liked to kind of push away Father Time in the worst in the worst kind of way. He never hurt anyone, but at a certain point they got to know when to hang it up. Brodeur Brett Favre'd it. He was the Brett Favre of hockey. There's no doubt in my mind. And you know, you see what happened to the Devils. I mean, they've had so many down years in a row ever since, you know, that run to the Cup in 2012, like 2011, 2012, where now they're getting the top overall pick in the draft.
Yeah.
Like, that's where the decline happens. It's actually, it's not fun to watch from a fan side.
Yeah, and when you have a guy like a Brodeur or even a Lundqvist, like, those are, especially with Brodeur, that is, like, Mr. Devil. That's, like, he's the guy. So it's hard to tell him, it's hard to push them away and say, Marty, it's over. Like, you're not really helping us win games right now. So that's definitely on the front office to be able to put a contingency plan in, so when you finally are able to tell that guy it's over, you have that guy that's ready. So that's why at least the Rangers have done a nice job recently. Is they had Cam Talbot, who was one of the better backup goalies in the league.
He's been
sent him off
consistent.
To Edmonton, and you see what he did in the playoffs. So and then they were able to replace him with Ronta, who was real good, and he's going to have a chance to start in Arizona. So they've done a nice job of having a good backup, but the best backup in the world isn't going to win you a cup. So yeah, they definitely have to do their best to win while maybe only have a few more years before it's Lundqvist. Whether he's in net or not, it may not be the Lundqvist that we've known.
Yeah, I mean, like, let me kind of segue this conversation to something else about the draft. I've been so lucky to talk to you about a cup for your team, but the Devils have been awful.
Yeah.
My entire youth was watching a successful Devils team. This has been some of the worst hockey I've seen in a long time. We get the top overall pick. The Devils get the top overall pick. And, you know, there was a lot of talk. Are they going to take Nolan Patrick out of Canada? And then, you know, this kid who they end up taking, this Nico Ischer, who comes in pretty much out of nowhere out of Halifax. He was like, the way people have been describing it, the way that I read into it, is that he skyrocketed up draft boards. He had an unbelievable World Juniors with Switzerland. He, in 5 games, he had 7 points, which is an unbelievable statistic for a young guy. Yeah. And, you know, the Devils have kind of made a transition in their time, and I think this kind of marks the end of the BSing of we're in a rebuilding phase. I think this kid should be the end of it. I mean, he's 18 years old, but he's got all the intangibles of a good NHLer. He's a fast skater. He's got quick legs. He's a scorer. He had 86 points in 57 games, 38 goals, 47 assists. 38 goals and 40. Now the math's not there, but 38 goals and 46 assists. That was it. It's just a very talented young player. And, you know, the Devils have totally made a transition. When I was a kid, I'm sure you remember watching it, it was an enforcer-type team. You have Brodeur and everything. You got Scott Stevens, Scott Niedermeyer playing defense. Yep. Then you got Patrick Elias running the offensive set, a sniper, goal scorer kind of guy. And then now we're in this era of when they made that second run, that latest run to the Cup that I just mentioned, Adam Henrique came out of nowhere, this finesse center who's going to dish and make plays. And now they're saying, all right, now we got to find playmakers to build around this playmaker mentality. Now you get Mike Camilleri. You get Taylor Hall on some ridiculous trade that I'll still never understand to this day. And now you bring in this Heischer kid who is supposed to be the next great playmaker.
Yeah, someone to be excited about.
I'm excited, but let me tell you, I'm done waiting. There's no defense. There's no defense on this team, and Heischer's supposed to be a two-way player. He's supposed to be able to play both ends of the puck, both sides of it. But I've gotten to the point of being a fan where I need to watch winning hockey. The Prudential Center got fans in seats for the first, I'd say half, generously half of this year because Taylor Hall was on the ice. But then they couldn't win.
Yeah.
You know, it's impossible to watch bad hockey.
Yeah, I think the only thing, I mean, I'll be a little negative here as not a Devils fan. The only negative is that this year's class didn't have that Connor McDavid or the Austin right. Matthews that you think, like, oh, this is, he's going to take us.
Yeah, exactly.
As good as this Heischer kid may be, he's not McDavid or Matthews. But, no. I mean, you take what you can get. As I mean, you have the number one pick. It's not like you have a choice to take somebody better. So, yeah, you got to be excited. But, yeah, definitely need to step it up over there.
Look, I'm not, by no means am I saying that I want a cup and I want it now, but it'd be nice to see the Devils back in the playoffs.
Yeah, just compete.
It's been a long time, all right? And, you
know, stay out of the lottery.
And, you know, it's been a long time, but we've also been talking a long time. So I think we're going to take our first break in this one. When we come back, folks, we're talking all things NBA. We're talking Knicks. We're talking Nets. Stick it here with us. Empire Rights back. We'll be right back. All right, we hope you enjoyed that word from our honored sponsors. Once again, I'm John Franklin. He's Sean Dyer. And now we're going to go from the ice to the hardwood. Sean, we're talking basketball here now. The Knicks delving into the overseas market one more time. Yeah. I'm not surprised, but I'm also a little, I guess, the word that I'm looking for here is not, I'm not surprised about them doing it, but I'm also I'm intrigued. Nobody really saw it coming necessarily. You know, this guy Frank Ntilikina was the top international prospect of the draft, right. But I would have never expected him to come to the Knicks as early as he did.
Yeah, so I agree. I think they did. I mean, last time they went across overseas, it certainly has worked out thus far.
Yeah, paid dividends
with Porzingis. But you got to think about when they took Porzingis, people couldn't believe that and were pretty outraged. If you remember that, they were very upset that Jahlil Okafor didn't fall one more to the Knicks, which I'm sure can't be a single Knicks fan out there that wishes they had Okafor instead of Porzingis now. So I mean, there's always an unknown with an international prospect because, especially people in New York, we watch the Big East tournament or any than the NCAA tournament, all these college basketball games, and you didn't see Ntilikina once because he's over in France. So I think Knicks, you have to be excited. I mean, I'm personally not a Knicks fan myself, but I root for them. But it's hard because they just don't really seem to know what they're doing. But if you look at the board, I mean, obviously Fultz and Ball, you knew they weren't making it to eight. Same with Jackson and Tatum. I think the dream pick for Knicks fans was probably De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that, even he was five, not eight. What shocked me is, to me, because watching the NBA this year, it was how bad the Knicks are. I couldn't believe that there were seven teams that were worse than the Knicks. I thought they had to be picking top five based on how because it was even when they weren't on the court, it was just the Phil Jackson drama. It just seemed like Charles Oakley, nothing was going right for the Knicks. I'm like, how does seven franchises that were even worse? So I think I couldn't believe there were eight, but I think I personally thought Dennis Smith Jr. would have been the pick
from NC State. He was talented.
Also
this year
a point
too.
Guard. And also, so I thought that might have been the move.
Well, the thing with Dennis Smith, too, that he was freshman of the year in the ACC, which is insane considering
talented
the talent
conference.
That was
That's
coming out of
probably the best conference in basketball this year.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I'm not I don't really pledge allegiance to an NBA team, but I'm definitely not complaining with this pick. I think the way that I look at it, now you have a European core. I mean, you got Kristaps, you got Willie Hernan Gomez,
right?
Who is, you know, he's all right. He's a good player.
I believe he made first team all rookie team today.
Yeah, I mean that.
Which is something to be excited about as a Knicks fan. You take what you can get,
especially with all the drama surrounding everything. But now you got a 6'5" guy that can handle the ball. That's really not something to bat your eye at, you know?
Right. And if you looked at the Knicks roster coming into the draft. You had Porzingis, who's obviously your present and your future. Hernan Gomez is a nice piece to build around in the future as well. And Carmelo, as I personally think Melo doesn't get the credit he deserves, being in New York, and Knicks fans don't appreciate him like they should, but he's not the future. He's getting up there in age. He's going to give you a couple more years, and then he's going to move on. And aside from those three guys, there's not a ton of talent on this roster. There's not a guy that you think that you consider a piece to build around. So really, as a Knicks fan, anybody, any type of talent, position-wise, it didn't matter. You could take any position. So I think, he's a talented guard that you need. You need a point guard. If you look around the league, you get Curry and Westbrook, and now James Harden is a point guard. It's a point guard. Kyrie. It's a point guard driven league.
Yeah.
So you need a good point guard, and you look at the top two picks, Fultz and Ball, both point guards. So. Yeah, you definitely need a point guard to compete in today's NBA.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I think, you got to be excited as a Knicks fan. I'm sure there are Knicks fans that are disappointed just because they never heard of the kid. But if you watch highlights and you look at the numbers and read up on the kid, he's
really
a talented player.
Really talented.
You wrote a piece on Empire Writes Back.
Yeah, we'll get into it in a second. But the one thing that I was, I admire too, about the league as opposed to the Nolikina pick is that, you know, like you said, it's a point guard driven league, but with the Knicks, the move that this means is get rid of Derrick Rose.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
You kind of thought he was going.
He's hitting free agency, and he didn't seem
keen on the idea of coming back.
No.
But this is the period, the exclamation point too.
Right.
Whatever you want to call
slams
it.
Slams it to a close instead of just shutting it.
Don't let it hit you on your way out. I mean, I wasn't a fan of the Derrick Rose move to begin with. He's aged. He's got injury problems.
Absolutely.
And then the worst part about it was going after Joakim Noah. That contract and whatever garbage that Phil Jackson wants to go through to say that was a good contract, by all means, I'd love to get a very wordy, ridiculous explanation from him, but it just didn't make sense. There was no reason to go after Noah after you get Rose, and you have talent down low. I never understood it. It was just a way to bring in Rose, but now you get Nolikina, who can attack the rim. He's got size. He's got length. He's a little bit more on the muscular side for a guy as lanky as he is. He can play in the post. He can shoot over guards. I think talent wise, this is a great pick. I think the other thing that's going to be huge for them is it's not a big name, like we said. Nobody coming out of this draft is going to be thinking about what's Frank Ntilikina doing in New York. It takes a little bit of an eye out of the New York situation with what Phil Jackson's been, screwing up. And, like, the whole Melo thing and trading Porzingis, which, thank God it didn't happen.
I think that's the real win. For a Knicks fan, I think the big win on draft day is that you came out of it and Porzingis is still a Knick.
Yeah, he's still a Knick.
If you traded him, what do you have to look forward to this year? If Porzingis isn't a Knick, why are you going to go watch Melo who, if we're being honest, is he's on the downswing of his career. If there's no Porzingis, there's not much to watch. Although the reports were that what they were asking from the Celtics, Jay Crowder, Jaylen Brown, the number 3 pick, which ended up being Jason Tatum, and then the Brooklyn Nets 2018 first round pick. If they got that, okay, you could swallow that because you get some pieces that you maybe help you now and in the future. But realistically, you're not going to get any type of package like that for Porzingis, as good as he is. I think anything you got for Porzingis would have been upsetting. So the fact that he's still around definitely makes it a win. So you get to keep Porzingis, you get Nilikina. Now you have two international guys to build your team around. And to your point of the Rose and Noah contracts, I think that's why Melo doesn't get the credit he deserves. Phil Jackson tried to put Melo on the 2012 Bulls in 2016, and age and health, it's just not going to work out.
Yeah, I agree.
A lot of Knicks fans, the Knicks fans that boo him when they lose a game or he can't hit the shot, they want him to be what LeBron was for the Cavs before he went to the Heat. And take a mediocre team all the way to the finals and compete for championships every year. And as good as Carmelo is, he's not LeBron James.
Yeah.
Nobody is.
No.
He's been on broken rosters for almost his entire career. So
like you said, he does not get the credit.
He's one of the best players in the NBA, but it's just the New York market is obviously a ton of pressure. If his career individual numbers and team win loss records were what they were, and he played his whole career in Denver, he'd be looked at so much higher than he is now. But it's the Knicks, it's New York, there's a ton of pressure. So we're not winning. Like I said, with the Rangers, you're not winning championships. Great, even if you're winning playoff series, we want championships. And the Knicks obviously haven't even been to the playoffs recently. Yeah. So there's a lot of pressure on him. But I think he is definitely underappreciated in New York. But
I really think this kid is going to help him. I'm going to be honest with you. I think this Nilikina kid, Melo is obviously, like we talked about previously about hockey, father time, like you said, undefeated. Melo's getting up there. There's no question about it. And what this kid Nilikina does is he's a big guy that's going to handle the ball. Melo doesn't have to run any sort of, swingman point that he's been doing, And this kid, as good of a scorer as he is, the way he can attack the rim with his size, he is a very talented passer. Very, very talented. When I was watching his highlight tapes, which if you go to my article on our website, you'll catch his highlights in there. Really just strong mentality with the ball for a person that's so young. And it takes Melo out of the mindset of, I need the ball in a one-on-one situation and I'm going to shoot that fade over whoever's guarding me. And, let's be real. It's Kristaps New York now. It's not Melo's court. If Melo is at this point, he's a side piece to the main attraction,
which is probably good for not only the Knicks but also Carmelo to take a little pressure off himself.
And I think that really does help the team as a whole. But the Knicks aren't the only team in New York.
You're right.
But I kind of wish they were for the amount of drama that they provide us with week in and week out.
They definitely fill the headlines enough. We don't need another one, but we got another one.
But the Nets, on the other hand, are just in a never-ending cycle of, I don't even know what to call it.
Yeah,
it's just a downward spiral.
Right, because as a Knicks fan, you're like, oh, there's not a whole lot to look forward to. But just look over in Brooklyn and look at that
look
roster.
At a different
not only just the roster and what the lack of a roster. And then the draft picks. It's a new front office, and they're trying to patch up the gigantic holes that the former front office has given them. So I give them credit for what they're doing. So we'll go into what they're doing. They had the 21st pick. No, 22nd.
I mean,
let's see, 22nd. The Nets had the 22nd pick. In this year's draft, they got that pick from the Wizards when they traded Bogdanovich at the deadline, and they took a kid, Jared Allen, center out of Texas. He's a big kid.
They need size on that roster.
Yeah, they like the Knicks. You're looking just talent. You need somebody. You need anything.
You need the best available at that spot.
You need the talent. You need the upside. This kid, 19 years old, just turned 19 a couple months ago. He's a little under 7 foot. He's a shot blocker. He's going to protect the rim for you.
He's weighing at 235 pounds, too. That's a big man.
Yeah, he's a very big man. And like I said, he's just turned 19, so there's room to grow. He'll definitely get in an NBA weight room, put some pounds on, get some muscle. So that's something to look forward to. Of course, they did not have the number one pick that they technically should have had. So there's that. And the Celtics trade, only the Nets fans just have to keep remembering. There's only one more year. Next year, first rounder is also going to the Celtics. But then 2019,
yeah,
you get your pick back, and hopefully you can add some talent there. But
well, let me ask you a question here. Do you think, you know, they go out and they get D'Angelo Russell, who is a very talented player for the absolutely record. I mean,
he's the number two pick just 2 years ago.
Well, yeah, if you're, and he's a point guard. Yep. Like, we're just saying, point guard driven league. If you're looking at the draft this year, let's say the Nets hypothetically had the first overall and they take Markelle Fultz, is it apples to oranges to say that D'Angelo Russell would be it like 2 years later?
You're getting a point guard instead?
Is that trade kind of taking the sting out of not having that pick?
So, well, I mean,
it's all hypothetical.
You have a point there. So, I don't think Fultz is quite the, or Russell isn't quite the player that Fultz is. But, like I said, it's a new front office. They're doing what they can, what they got.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you make a good point. That's, at least you're getting a point guard. At least you added something. Yeah. You added some talent. And a young one at that, too. Right. He's very young. He's only been in the league 2 years, and he's seemed to be developing pretty well over in LA. And he was the guy over there. He's a big spotlight post Kobe. He's the kind of the face of the franchise there.
Which is so hard to do.
Right. It's impossible to follow up a guy like Kobe. So there's a lot of pressure on him. Hopefully now he can come to Brooklyn, not to worry about the pressure so much or the big spotlight, and just kind of play his game. Because at Ohio State, the kid was real good.
So good.
So the pick this year for in the Celtics trade, they were able to swap. Celtics could swap picks. So obviously the Celtics went and got the number one pick. And the Nets ended up with the 27 pick and used it to get Russell. So I think that trade's a win, a big one for the Nets, because you got Brook Lopez, an expiring contract. He was gonna walk this year.
Yeah,
you weren't gonna. You there's no way he's coming back.
More than you bargained for with him.
Oh, he was a great player. He was your guy, because he was the guy when they got KG and Paul Pierce.
Yep.
In that Celtics trade, they also had Joe Johnson and Darren Williams, and that was the starting five that was supposed to take the league by storm. Obviously, it didn't work out. But even after
those names on paper, looking back at it,
right? Oh,
it's just—it sounds like a video game.
It does. Yeah, you put together like, because you already had Williams, Johnson, and Lopez,
and Joe Johnson was so good then too.
Yeah, you have your big three, which is what everybody's looking for these days, and then you go and get KG and Paul Pierce, proven winners in Boston, and savvy veterans, and obviously it blew up in their faces. But I mean, you make the move then. You move on now.
Yeah.
But yeah, even post those four veterans leaving, Brook Lopez gave you good basketball for the last few years.
Yeah.
And he's an expiring contract. So you take an expiring contract and the first round pick you end up getting instead of the number one pick, and you turn into a talented point guard in D'Angelo Russell.
Very true.
So you have him, you still have Jeremy Lin, Caris LeVert is a young guy, and Sean Kilpatrick. Those are two guys.
I really like Sean Kilpatrick, too.
Kilpatrick and LeVert are two guys that most NBA teams wouldn't see minutes, but they're getting minutes here, and they're showing that they're talented.
Yeah.
And a lot of these – that's the thing with a lot of these NBA draft picks. Most people focus on, like, the top 10, because then it's like, oh, after that, nobody really plays that much. Because based on certain situations they end up in, they don't get the minutes. But you come to Brooklyn, we got nothing to lose. You throw the kids in there and see what happens, and they've been talented. You add Jared Allen. So you got some young pieces now.
I'm not saying they're going to be winners right away.
No,
they're not.
Not at all. They're definitely
a
definitely
bizarre thing to say.
Multiple years away, which is – it's. I hate to break it to Net fans. 2018 draft's going to hurt just as much, because that pick that's going to the Celtics most likely going to be top five, if not number one. It could be number one, but probably going to be in the top five.
And there's potential for a lot of good players coming into this the draft in 2018.
Yeah.
Too.
So it's gonna keep stinging. It is, but Nets fans already know that. We don't need to tell them that.
Yeah.
We don't need to rub salt in the wound. They know. But so you gotta look at the bright side and adding a couple young kids and Allen and Russell, and you gotta look forward to 2019. That's when that's your big draft. You get because they're gonna be bad this year, so you'll be picking a top five in 2018, and you're not gonna add anybody in the top five. So you're probably gonna be bad again.
Yeah.
So then 2019, you're probably picking top three, maybe number one. Then you get your guy there to build around with Russell and hopefully Allen.
I mean, it's just, again, like you said, the front office is doing their thing right now, and you got to really respect it for what they've been, essentially what they've been thrown into. But, you know, there's whipped cream on top of garbage in all of this for the Nets and the Knicks. It looks like the turnaround is on the way. Maybe, if I'm going to make a bold statement here, maybe the Nets a little quicker than the Knicks, even with the talent there. But the thing is, Phil Jackson and that franchise and drama, it doesn't matter what age you are, what level of sport you're playing. You could be playing rec basketball in fifth grade. I don't care. If there's drama surrounding anything, if you don't like somebody else on the court, if you don't like the coach, if you don't like the front office guys, you're not going to play well for them.
Makes a lot harder to win.
Yeah, a lot harder to win. But we're going to take our last break before we kind of wrap things up. We just talked basketball. We already talked ice hockey. Now we're going to hit the baseball diamond when we get back. Once again, I'm John Franklin. He's John Dyer. We'll see you in a little bit. And we are back, folks. This is we're heading towards the stretch. We're hitting the end of this one, the end of the first one, but first of many. Once again, I'm John Franklin alongside my wonderful co-site expert, Sean Dyer. And, you know, baseball in New York has been kind of a whirlwind. For you guys listening out there, obviously, we got to divide Mets, Yankees. But right now the Yanks struggling. But the Mets, it's just, it's tough.
Yeah, it's coming into the year. You had Noah Syndergaard, foolishly, I might add, call New York a Mets town now.
Which very foolish.
I think, because it's just, until you actually win a World Series, you shouldn't be calling anything your town.
Yeah.
But coming into the year, they were the team with the potential. They were supposed, they had the pitching.
Oh, so much.
Cespedes is coming back. You hope Conforto takes some steps, which he has. So you had, the Mets were supposed to do some things, compete with the Nationals for an NL East title. And then you had the Yankees, who just sold off the veterans. They're rebuilding. We'll put it in air quotes, because we don't talk about that in the Bronx.
No, we
Cashin
don't.
Won't call it a rebuild. But they were in transition, we'll say.
Yeah.
So they weren't supposed to be anything special, and you had the Red Sox just getting Chris Sale. They were the big team in the AL, and you also had the Indians coming off a World Series trip. The Yankees were not in the AL picture coming in, and the Mets were in the NL picture in terms of playoffs. But it's, at least to start the year, for the Yankees, looking good. Struggled recently. But yeah, the Mets, it's been quite a struggle over in Queens.
Yeah, and they got, you guys want to head out for a good sale, make sure you catch the Mets on their Everything Must Go campaign that they're kind of hopping on.
It's just not nailed to the floor. It's going.
Yeah, it's just, you could go in to Citi Field and come out holding your very own Asdrubal Cabrera.
You could. Yeah, and he would love that. Just take him out of there.
I don't care where he's going. He could be heading on the LIRR anywhere. Yeah. But he wants his way entirely out of Queens. It's honestly baffling. Cabrera, who was so fiery in the playoffs, you know, and he was just so good, suddenly wants out.
Yeah. Well, a couple weeks ago, he went and dropped that pop-up Luis Castillo.
That was beautiful.
So I remember I was watching it live.
I was watching it too.
And I'm like, oh, I jokingly was like, oh, he's going to drop it. No one ever drops that ball. He actually dropped the ball. But yeah, that's when it's never good when you have people demanding trades. Because it's when the Yankees, when they were getting ready to make their deadline sell-off, nobody's, like, demanding out. Even most teams, like the Royals right now, they may be on their way to a fire sale. As they don't have the money to re-sign some guys, and they're not playing that well, so you sell them. But nobody's saying, I want out of here. I can't do it here. It's never good to have a guy, especially a guy like Cabrera, who's a pretty important piece. It's not like it's not like the guy, because he's playing. It's not like it's a guy who's like, oh, he's your backup catcher. Like, he wants a starting opportunity.
Yeah, or a Wilmer Flores type deal.
Yeah, who thinks he can start somewhere else. He, when healthy, Eztrupa Cabrera is starting for the Mets, and he just he wants out. So that's it's not good. But personally, I think Cespedes and Conforto offensively only got anybody else. You keep them. There's obviously you got the contract of Cespedes, and he's not playing poorly. And Conforto's a young guy. He's having a great year, and he's finally taking the steps to being possibly a star in this in the league. Anything else offensively, I would trade. You got Neil Walker, who's going to be a free agent. Unfortunately, he's healthy. He's hurt on the DL, so it's gonna be tough to trade him. Duda's contract's getting up. He's gonna be a free agent, so I would trade him. Cabrera already wants out. Jose Reyes is just terrible.
Horrible, batting under 200.
And he's you can't trade him, but you should get rid of him.
Option down something.
Yeah, and then Granderson. If you could get rid of him, I would do it. And then Jay Bruce, I think, is their best trade piece offensively. He's having a good year.
He's got pop, too. Yeah. That man can swing a bat.
Yeah, he drives and runs just about as good as anybody else. So he's definitely the big piece. And then in terms of pitching, Syndergaard and DeGrom, those are your guys I would keep. I would trade Wheeler if I could get something for him.
Yeah, I would
too. If I could get a good prospect package for a healthy Steven Matz.
I was just going to say that.
As good as I think Steven Matz is, and I think... I wouldn't blame him if they kept him. He could be definitely that third guy behind DeGrom and Syndergaard. But if you can get like a Gleyber Torres or a Clint Frazier, something like something, someone in MLB.com is like top 30, and they offer you that for a guy who would be a one or a two elsewhere, but is the Mets
hurt,
have
the, he's in and out.
He's been he hasn't been healthy, and the Mets have not had, at least in the last few years, their issue's never been pitching.
Yeah,
it's been keeping pitching healthy, but it hasn't been bringing pitchers up. Right. So if you could get a prospect for him, I would ship him. Harvey, same thing. He's going to be a free agent in that loaded 2018 class. So you can get a little head start on shipping him out, because he's not going to be a free agent, but you get more for those guys if you have team control. A team wants that even
plus,
more.
You know, we always forget about it as fans that this league is a business.
Yeah.
I mean, players that are big names like Matt Harvey, one time the Dark Knight, starting the All-Star game in New York. Put him in a low-end market that isn't winning games, people are coming to the ballpark.
Yeah.
Like, they want to watch a guy like that play. And
he's
a
fiery guy.
Yeah.
He's exciting to watch.
And you could look at it from that end of things and say, all right, maybe we trade Harvey to somebody who, yes, they're not succeeding, but they got some really good prospects, and they're willing to give them up just to sell a ticket. It's definitely doable. There are teams with front office guys out there that think about it in that regard, and you can't knock them for thinking about it that way,
especially with a guy like Harvey, because you'll get him for the rest of this year, and you got him for another year.
Yeah,
it's not a guy where it's like you don't trade for a rental to fill the seats because you got a couple months and you can't
exactly.
Especially low market, you can't guarantee you bring him back. But a guy like Harvey with multiple years left on his deal, you could get a pretty good prospect package for a guy like that.
Absolutely true. And the Mets in and of themselves, they have the capability to win. Like, They can beat
the
good
talent
teams.
Is there. They were a great team last year, and they were supposed to get better. Conforto was supposed to step up. Supposed to get Wheeler back. Help if their pitching was healthy, it'd be a completely different story.
I agree, and they've always struggled with run support with these pitching staffs that they've had, and the offensively, they might need a shake up.
Worst thing about for Mets fans is that this year their offense hasn't blown anybody away, but it's been better than it's been.
Yeah,
and it's finally getting going a little bit. And of course, the pitching is falling apart. Everybody's injured. Everyone's on the DL. But I think you definitely need, obviously, if a guy like Cabrera, when someone demands a trade, you almost have to honor it, because if they don't want to be there, you don't want them there.
Yeah, because then they're not going to play.
Not good for
the
clubhouse. When someone does not want to be there, you don't want them to be there.
Well, Sean, Cabrera wants a trade. You want to get him out of there. Do it. You have a guy in AAA that is raking the cover off the ball, and you're not giving him his due with Rosario. I mean, it's painful. It's so hard.
The way the Mets have played this year, because of how poorly they've played and how they're basically out of the playoffs, the Mets fans' biggest focus, I think, a lot of them has been on Amed Rosario down in AAA. It's unbelievable what he's doing. He's batting .319. He's got 7 homers. He's driven in 48 runs. He's also got added 13 stolen bases. And if you look at MLB.com scouting grades, he's plus-plus in fielding and arm. So his best aspect is defensively. He's hitting fantastic. So I'm not entirely sure what the Mets are waiting for. I don't know what more they need to see from him. I guess they have their reasoning. But yeah, if you have a guy like Cabrera who wants out, Jose Reyes is an easy candidate to just be designated for assignment. Yeah. Tell him to be gone.
Yeah, he deserves it.
So then you have Neil Walker who's injured. So your infield, there's spots in that infield for him to play. You could easily put him at shortstop. Wilmer Flores and TJ Rivera can rotate second, third. You mix guys in there. But you could easily create a spot for him at shortstop. Because right now, when Cabrera went down, Jose Reyes is your shortstop. One of the worst hitting players in all of baseball.
In the league.
All of baseball. So you could, it seems simple. I'm sure the Mets have their reasoning and we don't know it. But from the outside looking in, it's almost a perfect storm of a prospect being ready to go.
And he's 21, which is a nice, that's a round age of a guy who has a long time of a career ahead of him. But you bring him up now, that experience at 21, when he's 23 years old, if he's as good as people think he's going to be, you're doing it right. That's the growth you need.
Yeah, and one of the reasonings for him not being up could possibly be the whole contract thing. If you bring him up too early, then you got to pay him a little bit earlier. But if this kid is as good as he seems to be, if you have to give him that huge contract when he's 25 instead of being 26,
yeah,
who cares? That if you're giving him that big contract at 25 instead of 26, that means he's good. That means he's playing great baseball for you at shortstop, and you have your future shortstop. If you have to pay him a year early, I would deal with it. I don't think you have to worry about it because at least you know that means you have a good shortstop. If that's a problem down the road, it's a good problem to have because you got a guy that's worth paying at 25 years old.
I agree, and transitioning things, it's nice to see whereas we're looking at a team that's trying to find that time to bring up a prospect that's so good, look across the way and what's going on in the Bronx, because that's how you run youth. You and I have been talking about this long before we were on Empire Rights Back, just as fans watching
absolutely.
The game.
We
when they drafted Aaron Judge, this kid is going to be unbelievable. He was in the College World Series home run derby.
We've been waiting for a very long time. We were getting ready for Judgment Day
so
long before it happened, and we at the time were a little critical of Cashman for not bringing him because we were so excited and just wanted to see him. But you got to give him credit that he certainly picked the right time, the right way to do it. Brought him up at the end of last year, and the power was there. Obviously, first at bat, hits a home run. But he had holes in his swing, and he was striking out a lot. And you got to give Judge credit, humongous amount of credit. If you look at his stats in the minor leagues, every time he went up to Double-A, he struggled. He would go up at the mid-year, go up to Double-A, struggle. Then start the next year at Double-A, kill it. Move up to AAA, struggle. Start the next year AAA, kill it. And then did the same thing every year. Every year he struggles. Every time he goes up a level, struggles a little bit, and then he makes such great adjustments, and then just kills it. And obviously, it's working out quite well for him right nowadays.
And the thing I love to look at is just the comparison of his swing from last year to this year. If you look at it, his swing last year, it seemed almost I wouldn't call it lazy, but much more upright. He's standing straight up. He's not jumping into the ball, taking a step towards. You look at his swing this year, it's night and day. He's got his knees bent. He's starting with an open type stance, and he steps in towards the ball. His plate coverage is unbelievable because of the way he steps towards it. And then just his size in general and the amount the torque he gets in a swing is going to generate enough power. Right. But the average is what's mind-boggling to me.
That's what's been most impressive, absolutely.
Because you look at a guy he's supposed to come up and he's supposed to hit home runs. That was his whole thing.
Just look at him, you're obviously
you
a power
expect
hitter.
Power.
You're 6'7", 280. You're a power hitter.
Right. But when you're batting over 300.
It's hitting 332.
That's 332. Insane. You're batting that well, and you're hitting home runs. You're driving runs in. He's without a doubt if the season ended today, he's got to be the MVP and the Rookie of the Year.
100%.
There's no doubt about it.
He's got an on-base percentage over 440. He takes his walks, which is a big thing, big change from last year. All those strikeouts he had last year, he doesn't chase the pitch, the two-strike pitch down. He's so good with two strikes, especially now with the 26 home runs. Pitchers get him to two strikes and are still fearing him. They still don't want to throw him a third strike. They want to make him swing at a ball. They throw
that down and away slider.
They want him to swing at a ball for a third strike. They're not throwing him a third strike. And he has shown great patience, waiting, working at the full count. Then they have to come in, gets a base hit, or he'll take the walk. He takes his walks. He gets on base. He hits for power, hits for average. He's even stolen a few bases, and he's been great defensively. He's made some highlight catches. He makes the routine catches. And he's got a great arm.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot missing.
His intangibles are unbelievable.
And he's an unbelievable just human being outside of the baseball field.
I was just going to say that.
When you listen to him be interviewed, he's gotten the Jeter comparisons, and it's
a long time coming. I have said it. I'll own up to it.
It's difficult to put that on somebody, but he's just so well spoken, and it's not about him.
No.
They ask him questions about what he did that day, his stats that day, and he said, "I'm just glad we got a team win. It's all about the team." They ask him, "Oh, you could be in the home run derby. I'm just trying to win games right now. I have a job to do out in the field. Are you going to win MVP? I don't make enough money to win MVP. I need to win games, and then we'll worry about that later." He says all the right things. He does all the right things.
I mean, the best thing to me was I went to a game a few weeks ago, and you watch him, and he will stand there during warm-ups and just sign autographs up the right field line. All the kids love him. You got a guy in New York now playing for a team that just is synonymous with winning, an organization that always wins. It's been the Yankees thing since the get-go, since the beginning. And now, not only does he help them win games, and he's the guy, but he's the guy you want your kid to look up to, regardless of what team you're rooting for.
Absolutely, yeah. That's the thing. Because the Yankees outside of New York are such a hated team.
Yes.
Because of the way they've done it recently with the big
money
contract,
and
just
throwing money
at veterans. But you wrote about it on Empire Rides Back that he's so hard to hate.
Yeah.
And there's so many Yankees that I will, like A-Rod, so easy to hate.
Yes.
So easy to hate. But you have a guy like Judge, and he's outside. You have to root for him. Red Sox fans obviously going to hate him. Mets fans are going to hate him. But like a Cubs fan or a Diamondbacks fan, you can't be like, "Oh, I hate Aaron Judge." You could say, "Oh, I hate everybody. He's making $250 million to hit these home runs." Aaron Judge is such a likable guy,
and it's refreshing. And he went up, you know, the way that a baseball player should be brought up. It wasn't like he came up, did well, and went to a big market. He came up through the big market.
Yep.
And he owned it, and he owned the spotlight that he came into, and he won, and he's winning. And it's just exactly what you want to see out of a guy like that. And, you know,
he's taking it humbly every step of the way.
Exactly. And the tough part about it now is that with all the team's struggles, he continues to do well.
Yeah.
You know, he does. He just continues to hit the ball well.
The other day they lost 8-1. He had the solo home run. That was
it. And, you know, that's just who he is. But the wheels are teetering off the wagon right now for the Yankees.
Yep.
Hicks.
There's some struggle. Yep.
Could be a potential all-star. Goes down with an injury.
Yep. Heads the DL with some oblique discomfort.
Yeah, the soreness.
3 to 4 weeks. He says he's expected to be on the shelf. Luckily for the Yankees, the day before Ellsbury comes back. So Ellsbury slides right into center field today.
Yeah. Hopefully he can get back on track, too.
Yes. And Ellsbury, he was hitting the ball well before he got injured. The biggest question mark with Ellsbury has always been, how long is he going to stay healthy for?
Because
you can't, the way it's gone, because you got Castro leaving the game tonight with an injury. Sanchez has been banged up here and there. Holiday is out tonight and yesterday with an allergic reaction. And he's still sick. It's been days. So you really can't afford another injury. So you need Ellsbury to stay healthy, and obviously everybody else to stay healthy as well.
Yeah. And they're just saying that Castro's injury is a hamstring strain.
Hamstring, yeah. So that's what you had CeCe go down with. So you hope it's a little less of an issue. CeCe, though, is supposed to be back by the end of the month. But, yeah, the injury bug starting to hit them at a tough time because they were already losing. Before they had the 7-game losing streak, mostly healthy. And then you start losing some players. It definitely hurts. But it really sucks for Hicks because he's having such an unbelievable year.
after struggling for much of his career with the Twins and last year with the Yanks. And he's putting up all-star numbers.
Well, he was a top prospect when he was coming up, don't forget.
Right. He was
highly touted.
Absolutely. But he struggled when he hitting major league pitching, and he's finally getting it going, and he deserves an all-star spot.
Absolutely.
But coming into the year, he was the fourth outfielder, so he's not on the ballot. So he's not going to get voted in. He could get put in by one of the managers, but obviously if he's out, he'll probably be out right up until round, maybe even beyond the all-star game. So it doesn't look great for him now, but he's having a great year anyways. But yeah, they need to get back on track.
Well, you know what it is for me with the getting back on track thing? I'm glad the injury bug hit him a little early, because that gives time for a team to get healthier if you're optimistic. I mean, if you think that they're going to come back and be healthy and do well. Like CeCe, before he got hurt, the youth he found this year has been remarkable. And I love to watch that guy pitch. I don't care when he's pitching. I love – and the way he uses his location, now he knows he's not going to overpower anybody. But his changeup is still lights out.
He's become a better pitcher. His stuff has deteriorated as anyone's does with age. But a lot of guys – because when he was making the big money, he was 97 mile an hour – throwing absolute heat, which back then, because now a lot of guys throw 97, 98, but even just a few years ago, it was not that common. He was throwing absolute gas and blowing people away with his stuff, and then you lose this. A lot of guys throw that hard. When they lose the velocity, they lose it all. The wheels fall off, and they can't figure out how to get guys out. You look at a guy like Tim Lincecum.
Lost
the velocity.
Dropped it.
Gone. Brian Wilson, the Giants reliever.
Yeah.
There were rumors earlier in the year he's going to come back as a knuckleballer. He's just a knucklehead.
Yeah.
But CeCe's lost the velocity, but your location's unbelievable. He knows how to pitch. He mixes speeds. He doesn't have a lot of speed, but when you're able to locate a changeup, that fastball plays up so much more, and he locates all of his pitches. He mixes them up well. He knows how to pitch the guys. And he was unreal before the injury. He was 5-0 with an ERA under 1 in his 6 starts prior to the injury.
That's insane. And you love to see that. And the reason I love that was because the Yankees went out and got a guy, not pitching-wise, this is just like a general observation. You go out and get a guy like Chris Carter, who is supposed to be this otherworldly power hitter.
Yeah.
And you're looking at your team like, all right, yes, we just added this guy now.
41 dingers last year. He led the NL.
Yeah. I mean, he's supposed to be unbelievable, but then the guys who were already there are the guys who were carrying this team. Carter's gone.
Hallelujah.
Yeah, thank God.
Yeah.
I mean,
it was a long time coming, but yeah, you got a guy like Castro, who was never bad, but he's having an unbelievable career this year.
Well,
Gardner stepped it up power-wise, especially.
Right.
Yeah, and Hicks.
It's a whole different thing, and you know, until, I believe it was until tonight, we're going to find out if he ends up playing the next game for the Yankees. Castro, if this injury doesn't keep him out. Castro has played every game this far of the season, which is so valuable nowadays.
He was he was supposed to have a day off last week, and then Holiday has allergic reaction, so Castro got thrown right back in the DH spot. But yeah, he's been an Iron Man of sorts for us. He's played every game.
And his swing is just a lot smoother this year.
So many times. Last year, Castro would swing so many balls in the dirt. And to me, last year, he would swing at the ball in the dirt. We're like, oh, whatever, just walk away. Now, he doesn't swing at the ball in the dirt nearly as much. And when he does, he's visibly upset at himself. Like, he knows he shouldn't have done that. I think he's taken a lot of strides mentally and then with his swing. And he seems to be playing the game a lot harder. He's run so many balls out this year that's blown me away. He's beat out infield singles that he never would have done in the past.
Yeah.
I think a big thing is that we were winning, and he liked winning. He loved it because he played for some bad Cub teams.
Yeah.
And it is easy when you're losing games, game in, game out. You're giving it your all, still coming up short, to just kind of like mail it in. Like, all right, I'm going to do my thing. I'm going to hit. If I hit it far, I'll run. If it's a ground ball, I'm not moving. He liked winning. And
he contributed.
Yeah, and he was a big part of it. He's phenomenal. Didi is becoming a star of sorts at short. He's been one of the better shortstops in the league. He doesn't get the credit he deserves, especially with Judge stealing the show from everybody.
I think that kind of helps Didi, though, because you know, you come in to replace an otherworldly character in Derek Jeter.
Yeah, yep.
The pressure's on you. Now the pressure's a little off you with Judge kind of taking it himself. Yeah, and Judge takes it on so well.
He does. And I think Didi likes flying under the radar. He doesn't mind it. He said they asked him, he said he's been flying under the radar his whole life. He doesn't mind it at all. You should remember when he first, was it 2014 when he replaced Jeter? He struggled in the beginning. He wasn't hitting and he was making errors. And after we traded for him, it was, bat's not totally there, but he's going to play great glove. And it wasn't working either way. Yeah. He definitely felt the pressure of replacing an absolute legend in New York and in sports. Not even just baseball, but all sports. But now I think he's shaking that off. He's obviously playing great. And he definitely, it's not a bad thing that he's flying under the radar. It's worked quite well to have Judge be the star and Didi back him up.
I totally agree with that. You know, we could sit here and also just delve into the Clifford struggles, but we all know Clifford is just whatever he's been doing. When you're a changeup pitcher, players are going to sit on it. They're going to hit it.
It's just so bad.
Yeah. It's so bad.
It went from can't handle high leverage situations to just can't handle situations. He would come in with a one or two run lead, give it up. I get that that's a lot of pressure there. Came in, we're up five.
We were up six. It was 8-2.
Up six. What did he give?
He gave up two runs. He threw seven pitches, gave up a leadoff double, and then a home run, and Girardi pulled him.
Yeah, and all of a sudden it's a game again.
Yeah, that's terrible.
You're giving the opponent life, and then the other day he comes in, we're down 4-1. We're already losing. You're down three. Just get three outs and give us a chance. Maybe we'll put the other three runs in the ninth. Gives up four runs in the inning, and now it's 8-1, and it's over. Everybody's exiting the stadium.
Yeah.
It's over. Actually, not everybody exited the stadium because Judge was leading off the ninth, so they stuck around, watched Judge. I think he got out, and then they bailed.
Then everybody left.
But it was crazy to see everybody. Like, oh, wait, all right, Clipper's terrible, but Judge is coming up.
That's how otherworldly that man is.
We can't leave yet. And just the other day, I was watching the game, and my brothers are about to leave. I'm like, you guys can't leave. Judge is up. And they're like, what? All right. Yeah. Judge goes deep. I'm like, you don't leave when this man is up.
Yeah,
it's must-watch TV. You can't leave your seat, whether you're at the stadium or on your couch. You got to watch this guy. He's definitely the bright spot. If he could keep this going for a whole year and just be with that one steady piece in the lineup, a guy like Holliday's a veteran. He'll hit. When he gets healthy, he's going to hit. Castro has struggled a little bit. They said he had a wrist injury he was dealing with. Now he's got the other injury, but if he gets healthy, he'll keep hitting. Didi's going to hit. Guys are going to go through their slumps.
Yeah.
But if Judge could be that guy in the middle of the lineup that is just steady the whole way, which is hard, it's going to be hard to do. He's going to go through some slumps. But if he can keep him just to a couple games, the other guys will get back in their grooves. And Sanchez has been lights out since he came back and moved down to the six hole. He's been money. So I think.
Hit a few home runs this week.
Yeah. Yep. He hit one. Just hit one yesterday.
Yep.
Got us back in the game. So yeah, the hitting is going to be there. The hitting in general for any team is great on offense. Any baseball offense around, they go through ups and downs. It's just the nature of the sport. If you get out 7 out of 10 times, you're a Hall of Famer. So you guys are going to go through ups and downs, and offense is going to come and go. But the pitching is what needs to turn around. Tanaka, last start, looked phenomenal. Good. Phenomenal. So
I'm not gonna hold my breath.
Yeah,
though.
He had a knock on wood with that one. But if he could somehow find it, it doesn't have to be eight shutout every time. Just give me seven and two runs.
Keep us in a situation where the lineup is gonna put up. There was a time, I think it was the last, I don't know how many losses the Yankees have had. Pitching has given up more than 5 runs in so many of those games. If you give up less than 4 runs. I would say this team can win the game 7 times out of 10.
Yeah, I would agree with that. They have the offense for it. It's Tanaka giving you quality starts. Severino had a rough go last time out, but he's been phenomenal. He's looked like an ace. He's looked like the ace that we expected Tanaka to be.
Yeah.
CC prior to the injury was looking like an ace.
Lights out.
So if you get him healthy, Tanaka straightened out. Pineda looked really, really bad yesterday.
Yeah, that's true.
And it brought back terrible, terrible flashbacks to 2016.
That was tough.
But you need, if he could, he's an inconsistent guy, but if he was consistent for a long time, if they can get him straightened out.
He reminds me a lot of Javier Vasquez, Pineda, in a sense.
He puts up the strikeout numbers that Javi did, and it doesn't always result in
good things.
The quality starts that you would expect it to be.
Yeah.
Last year, Pineda's strikeout to walk ratio was one of the best in the league, and he was still, win loss was not there, and the ERA wasn't even there. But Montgomery's been good, so there's pieces there. Chance Adams is just banging on that door to get called up, and the way that Cashman handled Judge, we were all upset that he wasn't up earlier, and it worked out. So I guess we'll trust Cashman that he'll bring Adams when needed, but the bullpen needs to figure it out. Chapman healthy helps.
Betances has been so good.
Betances has been phenomenal all year, and I think Girardi now realizes that Clippard needs to sit down for a little bit.
And take a break.
Shreve has been really good. Holder has been pretty good, so it's there.
And Chad Green. Also, yes,
Chad Green's been very good, especially with now Adam Warren on the shelf. I think Green's going to now hopefully step up into that 2-3 inning reliever role.
Yeah, the middle and he throws, spot.
When he's starting, he was throwing 94-95. He's throwing 97-98 out of the pen, and he's been really good. So there's the talent is there. Hopefully it'll keep it going. But yeah, they've looked good. Yeah. But they're the bright spot in New York right now, despite the struggles. That's But as you and I know, better to be a Yankee fan than a Mets fan.
Absolutely
right now.
True. And before we go, we're going to do a little thing. It's going to be a consistent thing that we're going to go with. We're going to call it Final Thoughts. Just kind of a little thing that we want to throw out there. I guess I'll kick it off here, Sean. My final thought for the first Empire Rights Back podcast ever. I'm saying that CC Sabathia, after he comes back from the DL,
all
right, he's going to have the most wins on the staff by the end of the year.
Okay.
I'm saying he's the winningest pitcher on the Yankees pitching staff. Yep, might be a little outrageous to say it, but that's why we do our job.
You're right.
If 40% of the people don't like what I have to say and 60% of it do or vice versa, I don't care. Just have an opinion on it, folks.
Yeah, feel free to let us know what you guys think. Who will be the winningest Yankee pitcher? I'm going to say we got the Summer Classic All-Star game July 11th. And I think there's a couple of off days after that. So probably like the 14th or so is when baseball gets back up again, post-All-Star game. I'm going to say, we'll say July 14th or 15th, whatever the first day is after the All-Star break, the starting shortstop for the New York Mets is Amed Rosario.
I think
he's up by then. The trades may not have happened yet. Those will probably happen towards the end of July. But I think by post-All-Star break, they'll take their couple days off during the All-Star break to realize, okay, this kid's ready, and he'll be in the lineup, and give the Mets another bright spot to look forward to.
Yeah, no,
for
absolutely.
The second half, especially when you have to go fire sale end of July.
Yeah,
you got to have a guy like Rosario there to put people in the seats, somebody to look forward to.
I agree. 100%.
So I think they start a little earlier than the trade deadline, right after the All-Star break. Rosario is playing short.
Very true, and. Well, Sean, I think that's gonna send us here. Don't forget, you know, check out our website, www.EmpireRightsBack.com. Don't forget to follow us on all forms of social media. We're on Facebook. Just search Empire Rights Back. Search us on Twitter, at Empire Rights Back, backspelled BCK. And don't forget to follow your co-site experts here on Twitter. I'm at HeyIt'sFranklin6, little shout out to my favorite childhood television show, Franklin and Turtle. And don't forget to follow Sean at Sean R. Dyer on Twitter. We got some takes to go through. We love hearing your opinions. Don't care if you like ours. Don't care if you hate ours. But we like to hear what you have to say. We will definitely get back to you on some comments. Thanks for listening in. Sean, we're going to go. Stay beautiful, everyone out there. Take it to the weekend.